All right, here we go again. We're back with another weekly episode of Sheep Fan Podcast. The format's simple. We try and release a minimum of 4 shows a month. Members get full podcasts plus download. Non-members get part one. All shows are released on a Saturday. Podcasts are always available at sheepfan.co.uk. That's sheepfan.co.uk. We put part one out on Podomatic. They're distributing to Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Tapple if you're from Yorkshire. Please subscribe to the website for email notifications of all shows. But even if you don't and you can't be asked, all shows will be released on a Saturday. So just go to sheepfan.co.uk. That's it. Simple. I'm putting stuff on Rumble as well and Odyssey, the Matrix videos. I've been doing a couple of those. I'm only putting them on YouTube for a week for obvious reasons. And then I'm taking them down. But they're all on Rumble and Odyssey. YouTube keeps striking us, so we're on one strike at the moment, and as much as I hate the bastards, they are a handy platform to utilise for your own uses. Sheep Farm shop's open, merch shop, and with me as usual is our Chris, a bit early for his bottle of witch piss, but I'm sure he'll be having a nice cup of tea, no doubt, or a bottle of water. And yeah,
I've got good afternoon. Got a pot of tea, actually.
A pot of tea, you know, yeah. Not a pot of coffee.
Batman mug.
Right. Thanks for everyone who's ordering vitamin C. The shop is now finished, actually. The store's finished. I'll be opening it up, the online store, in the next week or so, hopefully with full product listing at the end of the month. Chris is gaping gobs. He's been busy making ashtrays and for weed smokers.
And your vitamins, you have to mention my gaping gobs.
Well, I am doing. And joining us tonight, in his own words, is a Yorkshire twat and sexy healer, live from Espania, Matt Bierski. Or as we know him as Bujalski.
That's when I fell in love with you guys. I like these guys.
Yeah, yeah. You'd no choice.
I love that kind of sense of humor. It just I like people taking the piss out of me. I think it's healthy.
Yeah, I do.
Look where we've got to in humanity.
It's a term of endearment, isn't it, when you take the piss out of someone? As long as you're not nasty.
People, but my partner doesn't understand it because of where she comes from. So yeah. It's like, you know, we do that as a form of, you know, like a
term of endearment.
Just like a bang on the shoulder with your fist.
Yes, exactly.
Because you can't. Hug them, you know, because we're Yorkshire folk. So we do that out of kind of love. It's the bonding, and some people in other countries just don't get it because they think it's the most shameful thing you can do than take the mick out of somebody. Yeah. So that's, to us, it's normal. It's beautiful. It's like a connection. But hey, isn't the world become snowflakey now?
There's no backbone. Everyone's turned into jellyfish.
You remind me of a story, Matt. When I was working in London as a chef, I think it was my first head chef job, and I had a young Spanish guy working with me. And I just remember because you're into bed. And he was late for work once, and I rang him, and there was no malice in it at all. And I said, "Where are you, you stupid Spanish TWAT?"
Twat. Just say it. Anyways,
you don't have to speak to me like that. I might be staff Spanish, but I'm not a TWAT. And I'm like, but I thought, if I said that now to someone, I'd probably
get sued
out of my ass, I think.
I tell you a story here. When I had a little shop and I had this lovely, lovely girl working for me. One day I came up the stairs and she's with three other girls sat behind the reception desk, all doing their paperwork, homework.
I thought you were going to say nails then.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the same thing. Anyway, so I came back at the end of the day, and I just, you know, just as she was leaving, I just said, you know what? I says, you know, if you were working in Dunstore or Sainsbury's, you know, would you, you know, working at the cash till, would you be able to ask your friends to come round so you're all doing, you know, your homework? And she went quiet. I said, I'm just pointing out that, you know, I do pay you to focus on the job. And she went home, and her mum came round. And I swear to God, it was like it World War IV.
Yeah.
World War IV. Because I said that to her daughter.
How dare you? Tell her angel to do her own work.
Yeah, it was awful. It was an awful thing. Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? Because those.
I think those you are Arkwright.
Those kids, they're not making those kids' life any easier, are they? They're not setting them up for the future, really.
Not at all.
Designed to fail, Chris. Yeah, designed to fail because nobody's got any backbone. I mean, if I run Mark up and, like we do, and you, Chris, and you call me names and blah, 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 and none of us, it doesn't even register.
You've got more important things to think
about. None of it registers. You know, it's just a laugh.
Well, sometimes it registers with me, the level of nastiness that you come out with towards me.
It doesn't to me, though.
I think you love it. I don't see that, Chris. I'm sorry.
Well, you haven't heard how he speaks to me off air, Mark. Why did you sort your mic out, you stupid
twat? I think Chris has been living down south too long.
Of me, Chris. That was only because of me. I told him, it started with me. I said, tell that twat to sort his mic out.
I think he's been living in Cambridge too long. He's turned into a fucking Safna. you need to come back up here and get your Blackpool Rock. That centre bit has gone a bit limp, Chris. I think that's where it might be.
It's got for a while.
Yeah.
Hollow.
Yeah, hollow, yeah. I think you need to be reprogrammed in Yorkshire. Yeah. It's similar to Chinese reprogramming.
Is this a comedy club tonight?
Yeah, it must be, yeah. Yeah.
Today.
We told a story in the last one about C.S. Lewis, about the evacuees from the Blitz in World War II. We've got a good comment from someone who I want to read out. We were talking about this actually the other day, Mark, on that Zoom call we had. And what happened was there was a lady called Jane Fluitt who lived with C.S. Lewis. Unbeknown to her, her hero was C.S. Lewis, but she just happened to, with her sisters, to move in and become the housekeeper of C.S. Lewis, and she didn't even know it were him anyway. So it's a weird story, right? She ended up marrying one of the Freuds, Clement Freud, who was, we all know the story behind Clement Freud. Anyway, I forgot the name of the operation that was during the Blitz that took children away from parents. It was called Operation Pied Piper. Catherine Hamblin reminded me of it. Operation Pied Piper.
That's insane, isn't it? Because we were discussing on ours that, imagine, you know, the pedo network that could have been involved in that all that time ago. I mean, it's not talked about enough, that story, really.
No.
How many kids we got?
There were roughly 1.5 million people relocated.
That's insane.
Yeah, so more than you. If I'd have asked you how many you thought, you'd have said a few thousand. But
a few thousand?
Yeah.
How many million kids were in London? Because it was
I don't think it was just London. Right? In cities that they thought were going to be targeted. 1.5 million.
To be fair, Dom, you know, they've got to figure ways out to feed the paedophile crew, the club.
But also, you've got that trauma, aren't you? That's national trauma over all the country. That
and I remember, I've got this written. I've got this in some of the Freud research I've been doing, and she reminded me of this as well. Anna Freud used the evacuee families to study mother and child separation.
What? Right? Bloody hell! So they're doing it with a psychological experiment thrown in there as well. Bloody hell! I mean, that's nice.
And in 1946, there was one in Palestine as well that did the same thing. With the Palestinians, it just keeps moving, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just how much trauma can we throw on these people?
Does it surprise you?
No.
The Blitz was used as a psychological operation, possibly as some kind of fiddling network, and to get rid of a lot of buildings in London that they wanted to replace.
Well, you've just said it there, actually, because what most people do, and this is how it splits humanity, is we all focus on one thing and we don't agree with anybody else because of our focus. Instead of saying it could be everything.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're using children to grab that heartstring to make you go along with the story.
Yeah. Have you ever asked yourself, why is it that whenever there's a huge event that everybody is up in arms with, it's always children's schools, or it's always at a disco event, or why isn't it in houses of parliament? Why isn't it, you know,
in an old people's home? Or
Well, if there were that level of crazed nutter out there, they'd be targeting the governments, wouldn't they?
But why are they targeting children? You got to ask yourself, why would you even think, if you hate the world, why would you even go for children? You wouldn't. You'd go for the people you hate, which straight away That tells you everything.
Yeah. And it's to get the emotional attachment to the public. Because if you say anything about it, say, I don't think that were right, that were exactly as it
was. A false flag or whatever.
How can you say that some children have died?
You'll get fined 150 billion.
Yeah.
If you say it, but the guy who did it is no problem.
Yeah, no problem with that one.
He's either dead or you never see him again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's something that I'm going to look into at some point is this evacuation, because there's a lot of studies were done. And there are a lot of children that were actually brutalized as well when they went into these families. So they were evacuated from the parents to save them, and then they got destroyed by evacuating them from the parents. Hmm. I mean, you're looking at a lot of people there, 1.5 million people. They're doing it for their own good as well.
Do you know what I think to myself now, Dom? The more I look at consciousness within human beings, and I believe that we're all extremely different and we come from a different place, I have this understanding now that when we meet people, like if I meet you, or you, Chris, I have this bond, this feeling of a good soul, a kind soul. I actually believe that there's certain consciousness that lies within these spaces that know each other are that way inclined. So I think paedophiles know that the people that they're talking to could be a paedophile because they connect with them, they feel them. And that's why I wholeheartedly believe 100%, I have done for 20 years, that we are not all the same as a species. No, inside the spirit within us are different. And yes. I believe we connect to the people we love and the people that we know that have come from the same ocean. But there's other oceans, and some are darker, and some are filled with red and blood and poison, and they know each other, and that's why they connect. That's why people sometimes have said, you know, these paedophiles know that they're paedophiles.
Do you think that's why the bloodline thing's important, Mark?
Absolutely, 100%. Because it is consciousness to consciousness, and they don't see themselves as dark or demonic or evil when they do these things.
Well, that's normal.
You can't change that person. And I've tried. I've told you before on a show that I used to work with certain people that their wives brought them to me reluctantly, and I tried to help them from stopping this feeling of wanting to abuse a child. And it might have lasted for a short while, and I was glad of that. But I always think there's, you know, you can't heal something that is a natural thing inside them, which is their natural spirit from where they come from in this cosmos, which isn't the same part of the cosmos I come from and you too.
No. And I think that's why it says that the psychopaths, Blair, Johnson, all these people are utilized in positions of, we'll call it power, but in prominent positions, let's say, that are the actors at the forefront that are supposedly making decisions because they're willing to go along with it. But there is a certain, you see them after they leave power, they're all friends. They're not rivals like they've been portrayed for years. They're actually friends. They get on. They work together. William Hague and Blair, you know.
How many pictures are all American presidents stood together, are there?
Shaking hands and hugging each other. And we view these people, they get idolized again, like the popular like actors and people like that and pop stars. They're all part of this, aren't they? They all, even if they don't start out like that, for some reason they can be, some people can be changed. Do you think this thing can change people, Mark? Because are they born, some are born that way, I've got no doubt, but are they, again, a lot of these families are eugenicists, aren't they? So there's, again, it's the bloodline, the eugenicists, you know, it's all linked, isn't it?
Yeah, I've never seen a full circle change in somebody who's a husband abuser or wife abuser. I've seen times where they've calmed the beast inside, but ultimately it comes back again. So it's who they are. And when people say, "I'm staying with him because I think I can change him," yeah, okay, good luck with that one.
Yeah.
Do you think that's where, I often think that's where the religious, like Catholicized version of, you know, when you've got to ask for forgiveness and they've changed it into a fact that you just say five Hail Marys and you're all right. It's asking for genuine forgiveness, where if you were beating your missus up, for instance, and you asked for forgiveness, you'd be crying your eyes out, wouldn't you? The grief that you realize you delivered to them, but it doesn't really work like that, does it? It's usually just a little cover up. I'm in trouble. I need to get out of it. And yeah, I would go back to where I was before. No, yeah,
they don't have empathy. That's why the nil and void of feeling and empathy. So,
and do you know what, Mark?
Yeah, go.
Just rewinding back to when we started this talk just about 10 minutes ago, when we were saying we're taking the piss out of each other, I found that people who can't have the piss taken have no empathy. Because generally, I can take the piss out of you and you can take the piss out of me. I don't take piss out of Chris because he's a bit touchy. He's from Cambridge now.
But you feel it.
Yeah. but when you see people who take it really personally, you know people that can't take it, they generally have got little empathy.
Yeah, I don't want to say what I think they've got, but, you know, it's...
Go on, Mark.
No, but I have seen a lot of narcissism in people like that.
I had an interesting theory that, I think it's not my theory at all, but that these bloodlines, they have to do horrific stuff so they get reincarnated or brought back into the same family again. The same souls get brought back into the same family again.
Yeah, but that's extremely possible. And it's like the idea of reincarnation and why we reincarnate. If you actually enjoy what you're doing, if you enjoy, you know, bending little children over and abusing them, then you'll want to come back again. So it's a case of that. For me, do I want to come back? The only reason why I wouldn't want to come back is to fight for children. And for a better world, but do I want to come back? Not really.
not to Grand Theft Auto land.
Not really, pal. I'd rather stay at home and let the madness, you know, just have an holiday, have a break, have a Kit Kat.
Yeah, have a quick cat. Yeah. But yeah, so the Operation Pied Piper and our friend Mr. Brand wrote a book called The Pied Piper.
No coincidence at all. That's just, no, it is. It's actually a coincidence. I'm wrong. It's definitely a coincidence. Definitely.
The whole Pied Piper story is literally a dark, well, all those fairy tales are dark stories, but that they reckon that really happened, don't they? They reckon there's some truth behind that.
There is. Yeah. They say there is. And, you know, has anybody ever asked Brand face to face why he wrote a book called The Pied Piper? I wonder if he's been on a podcast and what his reasoning of it is, because that would be funny. I'd just laugh at that.
Because that was, in a way, from his history to that point, I don't think he had any children at that point. He's totally out of character to write a children's book. It'd be like Mike Tyson writing a children's book, for argument's sake, wouldn't it? You know what I mean?
It makes no sense to somebody who has sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And dressing up as the child catcher in the Olympics.
Did you see it was about 4 hours long, that, right? Mm-hmm. Did you actually see what if you've actually watched some of the clips, he was actually pre-programmed. It was a pre-program. He was playing out what was going to happen in the future, because it was there was women pointing at him, like accusing him.
Oh, was there? I didn't remember that.
They were pointing at him, and they were, I don't know how many, it might have been two or three, but the same amount of people that were pointing at him were accusing him on this so-called witch hunt, which was the same amount of people. I can't remember, it might have been four, something like that. But they were dressed in, I think, were they dressed in red? I can't remember now. It was a while ago when I saw this, but yeah.
But there was so much in that Olympic thing, wasn't there? There were the dancing nurses. There was the coronavirus from above. There was everything.
There was everything they were telegramming us. They were pre-programming us all to get ready for. It's what they do. It's what they do. Have you seen the one with the CERN opening of the tunnel? Yeah. The tunnel.
Yeah. And I remember watching that at the time.
You get people saying, but that's not saying it's a tunnel. Jesus, what's wrong with
you? How can you watch that and not say there's not something funky going on? I mean, I'm not one to know all the images, and a lot of people did a lot of stuff on that. But I remember watching that at the time, and you're just thinking, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, I remember.
All the top people from all over the world sat watching this freak show.
And the people that come out of it, Extinction Rebellion, that dress in red, it's the same characters that come out of CERN, that have, not the same people, but the same sort of characters that are being played, all dressed in red, with black faces, that apparently are trying to save the planet.
They're always knocking around Cambridge, those freaks.
Yeah. And do you know what? I'm willing to always give people the positive opinion, if you like, the benefit of doubt. Brand might well have tried slipping his chains, for all we know. But you've got to say, I've never been someone who was drawn to him, whether it was his comedy or his acting, even before all this stuff. So I never listened to him. I've never listened to one of his shows. I can't. You know what I mean? I've never taken anything in that he said. Somebody sent me a video yesterday of him. I said, I can't listen to him. Yeah. I can't listen to him. There's something about him I can't listen to.
It's not what people say. It's what people do, what we should be looking at.
And I know people take him seriously as well. He's got 6.7 million on YouTube, I think.
Million. That's because people have the access to see him daily, and it's put in front of their faces. It's very simple. I got the same thing with talking about lemons, and as soon as I started talking about lemons, it got spread. And because a few people liked it, it grew and grew and grew and went to 2.5 million, right? Because it was put in people's faces. So anybody can be extremely famous if the algorithm is set to make it do that. And I think I think he is. I think he's been given all the opportunities to get to where he is. I'm not saying he's not a good actor. I'm not saying he's not a good speaker. But I truly wholeheartedly believe that something is not right about all of that story.
Yeah.
Well, when you take a story that goes into the about his mishandlings with girls and stuff, and it goes into the mainstream at such a rapid and such a massive way that it did, and then overnight vanished, gone. You have to ask some questions, don't you, I'm afraid.
Yeah, even if it's just been used as some kind of story as well, to scare other people off from saying anything. I mean, either way, there's some kind of controlled event going on.
I don't think the head of the mafia, of the global mafia, gives a shit about anybody. So no. We'll embrace you, come in, and then they shoot you. They don't give a shit. They don't care. The ones at the top. So he may be part of the system, and in his or he was, and in his head he might have thought that he's protected and loved for the rest of his life, and now all of a sudden, like the gangster doesn't like you anymore, you're disposable. So this happens, and there might have been a genuine reason for him to say, oh, they're after me and all that, because he thought he was untouchable. So who knows? But I just know one thing, right? If a guy goes into a toilet and puts his hand in through a hole into another toilet and masturbates a man and comes out again and says to the camera, oh yeah, that was a bit strange, I don't really know why I did that, and he's like, there's something wrong, there's something very, very wrong.
And not only that was played on TV, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's something wrong in the mind of a human being who
Didn't he do that to, Andrew Sack, Chris?
I don't know.
Manuel.
He rang up Manuel, him and Jonathan Ross rang up Manuel from Fawlty Towers and said that he'd had sexual relations with his niece. And to be fair...
he was in his 80s, wasn't he, at the time?
I took a dislike from then because I just thought I was crude. I didn't know about the masturbation thing till after, but... I mean, that almost seems ritualistic, doesn't it?
It was ritualistic. Absolutely, it was. It was there to shock, and it was there to bring forward this new understanding of TV. Because I don't watch TV, but now nothing shocks people, and they say whatever they want now. And it's more dark, and it's more satanic every single day. And people are just like, they just got accustomed to it now.
I mean, just carrying on from the World War II evacuee story. Somebody sent an email in saying her friend of hers worked for the BBC, and she was working on a remembrance program regarding the evacuees. And the upshot was only one of the evacuees would take part in the program. All the others were worked like slaves on farms and hated every moment of the ordeal. So... these are, I bet that weren't portrayed on that BBC programme, but it were all sweetness and light.
Well, could you imagine, even forgetting anything dark, imagine going from a city with your parents to somewhere in the country that you've never been to the countryside before and has to go and muck some pigs out or something.
It's traumatising.
It's horrible to a kid, isn't it?
It's traumatising.
I don't
That's
think my
what
missus,
it's all about.
I'd even seen a live sheep till she came up to Yorkshire with me.
What would you do now, right? Right? If all of a sudden the sirens go off and they say, okay, children that way, adults this way.
Screw
I
you.
I tell
yeah.
you what, you'd have to kill me.
Yeah.
You'd
yeah,
have to kill me.
Yeah. No chance. No yeah. chance.
But what do we know? Where does working for MI6 with shill mics?
But
yeah. See, you've got a new mic. You do realize now you've joined the shill mic club, don't you? The yep. big shill mic club.
Definitely. I said to Edgar, who looks after my stuff here, and I said, what's the best mic? And he said, well, this mic. And I said, and I like, because sometimes I listen to the new mainstream media, which is redacted. They are, unfortunately, the new mainstream. They tell you everything but the root cause of what's really happening, yeah. right? Yeah. So they're great in sharing information that the old lamestream media don't tell you, but they're still only giving you sound bites of stuff, but don't really tell you the root cause of things, which is still... for me,
yeah, they're still on side with the red and blue paradigms,
yeah,
aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, they are. They're still old Fox News anchors, whatever you say. You know, it doesn't matter if you break away, if you're Tucker Carlson, it's still the same. And I said this on one of my videos the other day. Every time I meet somebody who is in that field of work, I look them in the eye and say to them, "Do you really think that politics is the answer?" And they look at me and they realize it isn't the answer. And they don't know what to say. They laugh. They normally laugh. Or they'll say, maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anybody asks me about politics, I say, you're asking the wrong one because I never vote.
Yeah.
I've never voted, so.
Yeah.
Well, to believe any of them
because all lying bastards
are going to save anything, you have to be insane. And I always think of what Master Lee said to us, when he said, "What? Name one thing that's ever happened or changed in the last 30 years.
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Nothing's changed.
Nothing
you're right.
ever changes.
Not one thing. Nothing. They've solved nothing. All the thing they can do is convince you that we need them. That's all they ever do.
Well, all the policies are is exactly the same as the last lot. They talk about education. They talk about unemployment, war, police. Yeah. All these the same subjects every time, and nothing ever gets resolved. It just gets worse.
No, and we're talking about creativity. We're not talking about destruction because they're always bringing in new laws to bypass old laws to have more restrictions, slavery, and wars.
Well, everything they do, I mean, again, designed to fail. The NHS, for argument's sake, is designed to fail. It makes you ill. It makes you even iller. Yeah. And they spend $200 billion a year in this country on that side of it.
And all they've ever talked about is how it is failing. They've never talked about
not only that, all they ever talk about is that it needs more money. But every time they put more money in, it gets worse. What they're saying is it needs more money because we're going to get taxed more. That is the payback. Not because they want to save people's lives, because they need to create more taxation.
Yeah, I call it the gold pot. So what they do is they continually, we as the fools that we are, continually feed that pot. We keep putting the gold in because if not, we'll end up in prison. So they've got that sorted. So we keep putting into that pot and they keep sitting around a board table figuring out how they can take that pot of gold and use it for themselves.
Well Mark, like thieves
divvying it out after the bank robbery.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, like gold, great train robbers.
There's probably a few arguments there as well, isn't it? No, you can't get as much as me.
It's an extortion racket. That's all it is, right? If you don't pay in, we'll lock you up.
They're the biggest mafia.
Same thing.
There is. There was a guy who was talking about, he was one of the biggest mafias in America, and he was on one of the podcasts, and I just briefly glimpsed him talking, saying, we were nothing in comparison to the government.
No, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
True. You have to look very close to realize that's absolutely
it's an extortion racket. Everything is about extorting energy, cash, whatever it might be, fear, all everything.
At least gangsters only did it on a local level. We're talking national, international level. Yeah.
He was actually saying, you know, on a loaf of bread, you know, it would be 18 cents, but we'd charge 23 cents. But at least at the end of the day, they would still be getting, they'd still be getting some money. He says, whereas the government, you get nothing. They stuff you for everything.
Yeah. Every single thing.
Every penny you've got. Yeah.
And be, again, like taxation, you'll get people that say, oh no, in a society like this, you've got to pay your tax. You know, people should pay the tax. Where does it go? Yeah. Where's it go?
It goes where's it gone over the last 3 years?
Ukraine, it goes back to Bank of England.
Israel.
That's where it goes.
Comrade, yeah. All those places.
Back to Bank of England.
It's all bloody numbers anyway.
Just as a side note, right, I was watching a video of someone making a sculpture the other day. Because I watch things like that, but it were amazing. You know, when you're watching the detail of the sky, making this beautiful thing like
ghost. Yeah.
It was beautiful. I saw it too.
Yeah, but stop it. But he's making this sculpture. What my point is you look at some of the things that people are making, like, and he's just a guy, he's obviously got his little sculpture business, like I got my little business, whatever. And I was just amazed out of the detail. And I thought, he's as good as any past sculptor.
Master.
Yeah. No one knows who he is.
Exactly.
And then I flicked on the TV for a second, and Ant and Dec were on there, and this woman was saying, this was like in the space of half an hour, I don't know what they've done, I don't want to pay any attention. He said that they'd done something that was the first time in history. So when you just think of these two clowns sat there, right, yeah, who've done nothing.
Yeah. And
there's more examples of that. People, creativity on YouTube videos, for instance, you can see these things that people do. And the things that, some of this is better art than existed in the past. And it's not celebrated or mentioned or talked about for a second. It's just...
Yeah, what's just celebrated top is video. Shock. What's celebrated is violence. Yeah. All the negative things are celebrated by AI. It's all because this. I don't like this idea. I truly don't. And I don't wish it's true. But it's almost like humanity likes gossip. And shock and it's humanity's fault. I don't like to think that. I like to think that.
Well, it's the way we've been trained, Mark, isn't it? That's how we've been propagandized.
It's been by design. It's been by design.
Again, going back to the Freuds, it's Edward Bernays, isn't it? Edward Bernays was one of the forefounders of tuning into the Freudian work that equates everything to sexuality, whether you're buying a can of beans or buying a magazine or having your breakfast. Everything was sold to us. Drawn into us, the fear of missing out.
This is talking about visualizing though. Like when you walk into a supermarket, it's about color, and they've already figured all that out, what colors sell. But when you look at spirituality, which is never mentioned on mainstream because it's evil, because they're satanic, you see. So when you look at my kind of work, when we say, actually, it's not what color it looks like, it's what it feels like, it's what your body tells you need. And anything in a can, your body, your spirit and your body isn't going to tell you you need that.
No.
So they have to sell it in another way. They have to force it in another way. So it's a bit like food colorings. Right? They stick that in your mouth. Oh, isn't that lovely? You know, to change the taste and oh, that tastes lovely, but it's actually not really lovely.
Again, we were talking Synomics, that company that uses human aborted fetus cells. They use the taste receptors from the tongue as flavor enhancers or sweetness enhancers. So they've taken the flavoring out of aborted fetus cells and used it in food to enhance the sweetness. So what they say, they're using it as a weight loss gimmick where you don't have to put as much sugar in because it's enhanced sweetness.
It's all pure evil, mate. That's what it is to me. It's just pure evil.
Horrendous,
though, you can sugarcoat it how you want, but it's pure evil.
I know.
It's pure evil. You can say whatever you want. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, but it's from some fetus in the 70s. Oh, it's, but the fact that that's involved in some foodstuffs.
The fact that it's human beings in the first place, right, that should stop everything.
And I always say, Matt, that's one of my favourites. Because Dob's gone about it for years. Is it? If you want to get someone on the spot and get them to Google it, get them to Google HEC293 because it comes up straight away. I've done it to a few people now, and they're like, "Oh my god, yeah!" And then there's a list of what it's in.
You know, I look back on my time being a psychic reader for people, and I read for some pretty amazing souls that I sat and had coffee with, people that you'd never, you like, just blow you away. And I always remember this guy who I sat with, and after we did the session, he said to me, like, he didn't eat meat. And I said, why don't you eat meat? Because I was eating meat. He says, because it's not really, most of it's not really animal meat. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He says, well, just think about it. And I said, think about what? He says, if you have a farm, how many cows do you think you've got? And I said, I don't know, maybe 100. He says, you know, if you cut them 100 cows and fed, you know, your local area. He said, how many days do you think that would take to feed all them people before all the cows have gone? I went, I hadn't really thought about it like that. And I said, so where's all the meat coming from? He says, the human beings, mate. Most meat comes from dead humans. And that just freaked me out. And I thought, you're talking shit.
Silent Green.
So I started looking into it. And I don't want to scare your listeners, but I stopped eating meat.
I've heard that theory around takeaways and stuff. So mince, if you think of minced beef, it goes into a burger patty.
That's mainly what I'm talking about.
It could be from anywhere, couldn't it?
He's talking about the mass-produced McDonald's and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So basically, what you're saying is the ratio of cows to what we get as meat, it doesn't balance, basically.
Okay, it can't balance.
Yeah. I know it's just true about honey. It's a fact about honey. The bees on the planet can't produce the honey that we consume. Even seen a documentary, I think a Netflix documentary about that.
To be fair, honey, most, if you go into a supermarket and choose 10 brands of honey, it's not honey, mate.
No. Yeah.
Sorry.
There'll be somewhere in the detail saying honey flavored syrup or something.
Yeah.
It's like GMO, they've rebranded GMO, haven't they, to some bio. Whatever product, you know. So it's not growth modified organism now, it's bio identical or something like that, they're calling it. So they can rename anything if they want to.
I remember seeing, and I don't know if this is true or not, so don't take this as a fact, but I remember seeing that on that, like a McDonald's burger box where it says 100% beef, that's actually just a logo.
It's a trademark. That stamp.
A trademark. So it doesn't matter what it says inside it. It's also,
100% can mean what you want, can't it? It's like organic.
That's an entire cow. That could be an entire cow dropped in a mincer.
Or 100% could be, in law, 100%... meat or 100% beef has to mean it has to be at least 50% beef.
Yeah.
You see where I'm coming from?
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that's what it means, but it's a bit like organic. Organic only has to be 70% organic to be organic.
I can't remember the wording, but for cat food, because I've been making my own cat food, and for the wording for on a packet of Whiskers, for instance, I forgot what the word is, but it said, when you look into it, it says could be from a dead or diseased animal.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are. They're all from... What they are, so when like vets or things like that, if an animal just keels over, you can't use that in the human food chain, right? So that goes to pet food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I made a video the other day talking about this, that, you know, the food that cats and dogs are getting and the injections that cats and dogs are getting is basically the worst of everything. So my vet said, I said to my vet, what's inside them biscuits for my dog? Because I started questioning it a while ago. She says, oh, they spend millions and millions on perfecting the right food. So it's just the right minerals and like, so I started looking into it. And again, I asked a couple of friends and they said, what utter bullshit. The only thing they spend millions on is the fancy packaging. The rest of the shit inside is where they make the money, because it's absolute poison. And that's why most animals drop down very quickly of cancer and die.
They'll be spending the money on making the cat eat it. Well, that's where the money
Well, animals now and plants are getting the same illnesses that humans are getting, aren't they? They're getting diabetes, cancers, all this nervous system disorders, Parkinson's disease.
When you look at animals, fat, you can see they've done the same thing to animals that they've been doing to humans, probably for longer. They start to jab them, then they put chips in them. You can see the same pattern, can't you?
Gosh, you can,
And cats are getting, like, say, illnesses like cancer. You know, but my missus said, should we get ours jabbed for
cat heads? Another pattern you can see as well. Another pattern you can see. I look out into my fields now, not my fields, but out from the house, and there's hardly any animals in the fields. So they're keeping animals inside now, like they're keeping humans inside. So the animals can't even go outside and eat grass anymore. They're fed silage. Silage is not a nice taste. You can, if anybody eats beef, you can taste it. It tastes like you're eating. It's like a beef. Like a beef and yeast taste. It's not a nice taste. And also, the beef itself has fat on the inside of it. So even a fillet steak will have fat running through the beef. It's not beef anymore. Hmm. It's force-fed.
You were talking about labelling, and we all know now that labelling is absolute, utter bullshit. All labels. I went to, I think it was Sweden, and I was doing a, a retreat in Sweden, and the girl was about 29, 30 years old. She brought me over, and I said, wow, is this your place? She said, oh, it's my dad's. I said, it's massive. And she says, yeah, we have a potato factory, and we then have a crisp factory. So we make crisp with our potato. And I said, are they organic? And she laughed and she said, you know, organic means, it means nothing. And I said, why is that? She said, I'll tell you. She said, you can be growing potatoes and you can be growing them organically, and then all of a sudden there's an infestation of something. You can still spray them and they will still allow you to have the organic certificate. So straight away, I realized that organic means nothing. But the other thing is that how they get away with everything is very similar to design. So you've got Gucci, Armani, it's all made in China. And then they bring it back to Italy. They stick a label on it, and now it's made in Italy.
Well, did you know, from a manufacturing point of view in Britain, if you have something made abroad, and when you bring it back into Britain, you only have to do 40% of the manufacturer to say it's made in the UK.
Yeah.
So, and that might be sticking a label on it, or designing it, or printing a box. You don't have to make the actual product.
Do you think anybody goes around in a job, right? Be honest, right? And goes into the big manufacturers and say, where's the 40%? Let me see the 40%. They don't give a shit. It's just BS.
Well also, yeah, you have to realise why those fakes of all those big fashion brands, why they're allowed to continue to operate how they do. It's because they're let to do that because it's the same company making the fakes. It's the same people manufacturing them. Just make them out of the factory.
No, Chris. Nestle won't.
What's that? I read that book about it. They made it into a film, Gomorrah, about the Italian fashion trade. And it's the same people making the fakes as making the originals.
Yeah. That's a whole nother story. Yeah. I mean, if you started getting into the top designers, the Gucci's, Armani's, and all them, you'll realize how crooked and how dark. And
isn't that the same though as pharmaceuticals?
Yeah.
Producing pharmaceutical drugs and illegal drugs.
Yeah.
It's, because if you're making opioids, you're using poppy, right? Which means you're using the same plant that they use heroin for. So let's just say, a derivative is, you can split the plant in two. One makes heroin, the other makes opioids. Mm-hmm. So the waste product is heroin, and the one you're using in a chemical lab for opioids is the one you're giving in a prescription. Wouldn't you want to own both sides?
Mm-hmm.
No, Dom, all illegal drugs are done from someone's kitchen sink.
Ah, right, yeah.
You can imagine they've got a night shift garage, can't you? In the daytime, we'll do all the pharmaceuticals. In the evening.
Yeah, every time you watch a film with criminals, that it's always in a basement or somewhere where they're all, there's a few of them do it. It's like, right. Did you ever I don't know if you ever heard about this one, but a few years ago, there was a fire in America in one of these big, massive buildings. And they came and they put the fire out. And when they went in, it was a chemical plant making drugs. And then they realized it was owned by the FBI. Did you hear that?
I'd heard stories. Yeah.
You hear it for 1 minute and then it disappears the next.
Disappears, yeah. Yeah. Because they're the ones that are in control of it all. Are you telling me that they couldn't stop drugs coming into a country? Of course they could.
Yeah. Well, we've heard that film, it was made by Ridley Scott with Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe. You know, and he's a black gangster.
Yeah.
And it's a famous story that you'd heard about for years, but then they actually made it into a film where he would bring in drugs over from Vietnam in coffins.
In the military, funnily enough. Yeah.
But it were a military operation, wasn't it? Yeah. Did they link it to military in the film? I can't remember. Actually.
No, they didn't, but it was part of the CIA operation. Yeah. There was a name for it, wasn't there?
But you have to be insane to think that a guy from Harlem or whatever were doing that and delivering all the... How did he organise that? It was clearly a military operation, wasn't it?
Maybe he started it, somebody got wind of it and allowed it to happen. Mm. And greased it. He wouldn't have probably even known he were working for CIA.
Yeah.
That's how clever they are. He'll just think he was Billy Big Balls selling heroin.
And you've got the same even in that. What's that guy? Who was that guy in South America, famous one, that drug dealer?
Pablo Escobar.
Yeah. They made that into it. I watched that Narcs. And even in the show, you could see. So you had the CIA going after this big drug dealer. But they even portrayed it in the TV show was when he started saying, and I don't know if this is true because it's a fictional show, but they portrayed it as when he started saying, I've got all this money, I'm burning it. I'm sure you were an evil, horrible bastard without a doubt. But I've got all this, but you know, I can start helping my own country now. I've got that much money. that's when he was gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was the guy that got I forget what he was called, Gary something or other. He was called. He was like a reporter, and he Lineker. Reported all this stuff. Yeah, Gary Lineker. Yeah. he reported all this stuff, didn't he? And I think James Corbett did a show called The Suicided, and he apparently committed suicide. He had all this information about how the CIA was.
The
midnight was,
film with that with who is it in it? Hawkeye.
It, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I forgot his name now. I think his first name was called Gary. Anyway.
Owens.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it at that one.
Definitely a footballer.
Definitely a footballer. Yeah. Definitely a footballer. I see today. I've been getting a few emails. Today being Friday, the 5th.
Are they happy January. Emails? Are they
all of them happy? All of them happy, Mark. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
We'll go into that. Kate Garraway's husband has passed away. Derek Draper died, age 56, after losing long COVID battle. So yeah. I mean, I'm trying to tell you the story before we started, Mark. Obviously, you in Spain, you probably hadn't heard this among the other million stories. I don't watch the news. It was only that Doug did a Meet the Flockers show on it going back into 2021. And somebody put a comment on, I mentioned it the other day, how I actually felt sorry for poor Derek. Mm. Not necessarily literally felt sorry, but it's amazing how research comes back to you. This person put on... guys, I think you should research his connections with the Tavistock Institute and New Labour. He was a Blairite. His illness sounds very dodgy, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, to be now, fair, if he's just found us, he might not have gone.
I know that. I know. I'm not knocking the guy at all. There's no, or lady, whoever it was. And I did send an email linking the presentation we did back in 2021 about that. Hmm. But I'm just saying it's amazing how research comes back to you. But I just want to point out a few things about... Derek Draper, but I want to play this video because Mark said he hadn't heard of Kate Garraway, and it's only 45 seconds of her being interviewed by Andrew Marr on BBC about his illness, right?
So, Kate, I have to ask you about Derek Draper, your husband. How is he now?
So he came home on April the 7th, so we're a few weeks into it now. How is he? I mean, look, he is devastated by COVID. He can't really move. His communication is very minimal. There are moments when there's up. So therefore, in those moments, you know, you feel that you know he's in there. He has a lot of memory, but the accessing of it is very limited. So how is he? He's a long way from the Derek Draper that you know, Andrew.
Well, listen.
But he's home and he's alive.
Did that seem real to you, Mark?
As soon as she started speaking, I could tell that there were, you know, you know, just as a connection, as somebody who's in, trying to attune to that, she's hiding something and she knows she can't say too much. And she knows damn well it's got nothing to do with long COVID. And she's trying to portray and keep everything as it is because she just doesn't want to go down that path. Sorry, mate, but that was as false as you could get. And I feel so sorry for people like that who are so tied in something that even at the worst situation in life, they still can't speak their truth. What that must feel like, I can't even imagine.
No, and this is what I mean about sympathy. Right. Are these people selling the narrative for these controllers? Yes. Right. I'm bought into that one. But what we've got to understand is that somewhere down the line, these people have been either gotten hold of, controlled, whether we like it or not, and they've now got to do this through threats or whatever it might be. And you have to have, we're humans, man. We're not like them. We're not like these people. So you have to have some semblance of humanity in you and see that for what it is. And I agree. And it isn't, did he die of long COVID? I don't believe that, no. I think he had health issues prior to that. There's other interviews that I've got that show this, that he was on certain medication before. They've never released what medication this was. This was early in January, February when he became ill. He'd been off work. She's admitted this. And he was taking, she thought it were the painkillers he were on. So he'd had a problem with drugs prior to that. If I were going to put nail my, what I think the poor guy had a health situation due to an addiction to some opioids or something like that, because he had a problem with addictive drugs.
No, it was long COVID.
Yeah. But I just, he's just also, flick through.
Oh, now she's laughing. She's smiling quite a lot all the way through that.
Yeah.
I mean, is that, in fact, there's a lot of stress.
Well, it could be nerves, it could be stress. But when you've got someone, right, who is a trained presenter like Kate Garraway is, she is a trained presenter. So if you're a trained presenter, I'm going to play this other video actually, Mark, just to
a bit like Philip Schofield, who never says anything. Yeah. Which is
let me play this one as well.
I mean, the problem is I have huge hope and massive positivity. I will never give up on that because Derek's the core of my life and our lives. But at the same time, I have absolute uncertainty. And it's not just me, by the way, it's his mum and dad and his sisters and everybody who loves him, all his friends. We're all going through that. And the doctors don't know. They don't know. They don't know because they've never seen this before. One doctor said to me that he is the worst affected person he's had to treat that's lived. Thank God he's lived so far, and I'm so grateful for that. But they don't know. The doctor said, we've got him here, we're going to put him into the coma. And because overnight we think we need to do that, he can hear you, he's right here. And he just shouted at me, I love you. I'm sorry, I have to leave you. And I said, it's only for three or four days and you're going to be fine. And this is good, this is good. Because this is what you wanted and allow you to rest. And he just said, you've saved my life. Because I think he thought I persuaded the doctors to put him in the coma. Obviously, I hadn't. He said, you saved my life. And I don't just mean now, I mean everything, being married to you and the children. You've saved my life. And then I said, I love you, I love you. And the doctor said, he's gone, he's under. And that was it. That's the last time I spoke to him.
I actually truly believe that she is in pain 100%. I believe what she said. I don't believe that was an act at all. But what I do believe is that I think deep down everybody knows what the issue is, and so does she. Mm. And the fact that doctors are saying what they're saying, I mean, it's such a pattern now. It's unreal. It's unreal.
Yeah. Just a few tidbits of just going back to that guy who put the comment on there about we need to look at this. Well, we went into more detail than that in the presentation. I did give him a link to the presentation. Derek Draper had the following qualifications. He was an MA, as well as being coming up with being part of the team with Mandelson, that probably came up with the term New Labour, right? So he was there at the forefront when all this was happening. Derek Draper had an MA in psychology from the Wright University, which was founded by a guy called Nevitt Sanford in 1968 when he left Stanford University. Sanford was a director of the Tavistock Institute for Human Relations. So where he got his psychology degree from in 2004, it was set up by a guy who was a director of the Tavistock Institute for Human Relations. And he co-authored a book with Theodore Adorno, who was mentioned in Dr. Connolly's book as being the writer of the Beatles songs and things like that. So these are the people who... he also wrote a book about utopiates, about users of LSD, which was published by Tavistock Publications. Sanford was definitely a security asset, and he worked on MKUltra-type projects for the CIA. This is out there in the mainstream. So the psychology school that he went for, which is a small, unique, bear in mind, Mandelson, who he was close friends with, is a probable MI6 agent. Anyway, he also wrote a book. He wrote a book called Life. This was in 2009. He published a book to Derek Draper called Life Support, a survival guide for the modern soul.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. For the modern soul.
That yeah. is that I took that copy there, that bit that you've seen on that on them notes there. I took that from, I think it was Amazon on the, that's what this the book's called, A Survival Guide for the Modern Soul.
Wow.
These, I don't know the guy, you know, I don't want anybody to pass away. He's passed away now, so rest in peace. But in an article I read from in The Scotsman, I found that Derek Draper had major mental problems. We had addiction issues. And this was in 2009. So when he wrote that book, obviously part of his development and repair work, bear in mind he's a psychotherapist as well. So he's going to see a psychotherapist. And he was going to see, it said in The Scotsman, Draper is regularly counseled by renowned therapist and author Susie Orbach. She wants Princess Diana's therapist.
Right.
So he comes from an MK Ultra school. He works for Tavistock. There's loads more stories. Anyway, Garraway's father was a civil servant. Couldn't find any information on Garraway's father. Civil servant always rings a few alarm bells to me. And the meaning of the name Garraway is spear fighter.
You can't make it up, Don.
or spear war. And it says Garraway name meaning a person who engages in a battle holding a spear in his hands.
Odd, very odd.
Yeah, there were a lot of things, weren't there?
Dom, question. Do you believe that if he was part of this, do you believe that he didn't have the injection because he knew what was in it and that he passed maybe because of other reasons, what you've just been saying?
Well, the story goes, Mark, that he was used in 2020 to sell the stuff that happened in March. Mm-hmm. So he apparently got ill. And there is another one with James O'Brien where she actually explains, and it's good that you're listening to this because you're new ears to it. You've not heard the story. So, and that it reaffirms what we thought at the time and many other people thought, that there was something going on, a cover-up of some nature going on to utilise him, the PR guru of New Labour, as the PR for COVID, if you like. And I've no doubt he had some kind of health issue, right? Mm-hmm. So whether he had any jabs afterwards, I would presume he's like a pincushion. I think they've given him as many as they can. I don't think he had a choice because he was in a coma. He was being pushed around in a wheelchair, Mark.
Yeah.
I think he was totally gone, if you like.
I actually also feel that this woman who was married to him deep down knows that she's playing part of some kind of show with it. I think she knows that pushing this long COVID is definitely part of what the narrative wants her to push. Yeah. This is what I feel when she's speaking. So it's like she's also being careful about what she's saying. At the same time, she is genuinely, you know, heartbroken and upset. But like anything, if you've got handlers, which is, you know, ITV, BBC, they're all handlers at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You will read the script.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think there's in his background story, he sounds like he'd gone with women behind the back. There was another story similar to a story about, we told about Russell Brand going into that toilet. He was on talk radio, this Derek Draper, he must have been a presenter, and he went to Amsterdam, went into a brothel and was in a jacuzzi with some prostitutes. He got sacked for it.
Yeah, because it's something you all do.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially on a live radio show.
Shall I play that one with James O'Brien, Chris? I might as well have played the other two.
I don't like that man. I don't like to even hear
him. No, we do. We love him. We love him.
Oh, Jesus.
Bastion of let me just British hang journalism.
On. I've got cotton wool.
Yeah, get your sage out.
For a second.
How did it start? How did the? What was the first warning sign?
Well, it sort of came from nowhere in a way because he had been at home, homeschooling. It was in the week running up to lockdown. And so the lockdown had begun. He'd had a week of schools not being there. And so he wasn't really going anywhere and he was fine. But he had had for weeks and weeks and weeks a painful shoulder. And he started saying, I just feel so unwell. I think it's these new painkillers that I'm taking. I think they're making me feel quite sick. I think I might be getting sinusitis. And at that point, sinusitis wasn't considered a symptom. And I remember, you know, ringing the doctor and saying this, and they said, oh, no, that's fine. Has he got a cough? Has he got a temperature? And I said, no, although it's only me that's taken the temperature. But he didn't look like he had a temperature either. Sure. And and then suddenly I came home from Smooth. And I said to him, you do not look right. You just look grey. I don't know what's going on. He said, I've got such a bad headache and my whole body aches. And I said, I'm going to ring someone and tried 111, tried our doctors, which were closed actually and couldn't get through. So then did what anyone who's worked in breakfast television does, is ring Dr. Hilary Jones. So I rang Dr. Hilary Jones and he said, let him put me on the phone. And he did some sort of timing test for breathing. And I kept saying to him, is your chest tight? Do you feel like you can't breathe? And he said, no, it doesn't feel tight. It's just in my head. But he just said, I think you need to call an ambulance. I think he seems like he can't hold his breath for long enough. So
even though he hadn't clocked that himself, because he hadn't, I mean, it took Dr. Hilary doing the counting.
He wasn't coughing. He just felt... Yeah, he held it how long he could hold his breath. So he didn't feel like there was a wheezing or anything.
Sure.
So it was all very asymptomatic. And you know, and even when I called the ambulance, you know, I sort of tidied up the hall.
Yes.
Because I thought, oh, gosh, the ambulance is coming. I better tidy the hall. I wasn't in a drowning moment, you know.
Quite, yes, I do.
And it's only when the ambulance arrived, obviously, in their full hazmat. And I actually thought, gosh, I'm, you know, there's probably pretty people that are really ill with COVID. And, you know, and I can't believe I'm disturbing the ambulance in a very sort of British way.
I was about to say, yeah. That's about as British
but
as
it was. So it was so busy. Dear. That was the weekend when we were all told, you know, don't do anything. Don't, you know, even if you've got a broken leg, try and avoid disturbing the doctors who are dealing with serious consequences. Anyway, they came and said, oh, no, they did blood tests and said, we need to go to hospital now. And so, yeah, he got in the ambulance and off he went.
I can't take any more of that. First part there, right? I haven't picked up on this before. He said it was homeschooling before lockdown. There were no homeschooling before. Lockdown meant that you couldn't go to school. What I'm trying to say is the story is, it trips every time you do line by line, it trips up. But anyway, that's there's no blood test in an ambulance. We spoke to a doctor at that talk, Chris. There's doctors in the room at that talk, what we did in Huddersfield, right? And they said there's no blood test in, she said, a blood test in the ambulance. You can't do a blood, you don't, they don't do a blood test in the ambulance with a result.
I would not, even I know that fact.
Yeah, yeah.
None of it made any sense.
None of it made any sense.
It was a script.
Yes,
that was
been
a script.
To play a part, hasn't she?
That was a script, absolutely.
Okay, then we're going to finish part one there. If you're going to join us in part two, we'll see you there. If not, we'll see you next week. But.